John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And the Mariners continue going against the Toronto Blue Jays, coming up with Game 3 tonight. 4:07 is the game time, 3 o'clock in the pregame. And, of course, on the broadcast is Gary Hill. And so and he joins us on the Venue Kings hotline. Well, I guess so much of the excitement is still there from Tuesday night with James Paxton getting the no-hitter. But one of the downers last night was Juan Nicasio, who gave up 4 runs and cost the team the chance to try to win. They give up a five runs total. Wade LeBlanc pitching well. But I guess what concerns are there about Nicasio? Because as some people, I think Gary Ryan Divish was saying that his fastball was down to like 92 and 93 toward the in ninth inning.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Mike Blowers about that. Really, it's funny. I won't go too over the top with his velocity. That's actually not a bad range for him because his spin rate is really unique. He throws a very heavy ball. So if he's 91, 92, that's not that bad. He's very effective in that range. But the problem was last night is location. That was the big problem. You look at on the chart where his pitches were, and they were down the middle. And against a team like the Blue Jays, they have a ton of pop. It's a team that, you know, they're midway in the pack scoring runs, but they hit a ton of homers. They'll rack up doubles. If you leave it over the plate, they'll do damage, and that's what happened last night. So, you know, talking to Mike Lowers about it last night, the concern is not the stuff. The concern is the location. The command is the big issue, and that's what he's got to figure out. Because really, you look at the makeup of the bullpen, it's changed from when we went into the season. You know, you thought Phelps was going to be a part of it. Unfortunately, he's not. Altavilla, who was awesome heading into the season, on the DL right now. So the makeup is a little bit different, and they really need him. I mean, that's the bottom line. They need him to be that guy in the eighth inning to bridge it to Diaz, because they're not as deep as they were to start the season. He was a guy brought in to get the eighth inning done. Didn't do it last night. Although, a game like last night, you look at the runs he gave up. But also, I thought that game was won and lost early. They had a lot of chances offensively with guys aboard. If you can extend the lead early on, you don't know how it plays out. But especially against Garcia, they had some opportunities to put some more runs on the board, just not able to do it. And that's not much of a margin for error when you get late in the ball game against a team like this in this ballpark.
Yeah, but I guess that's where one of the concerns has to be, is that, I mean, he hasn't gotten off to a great start. He's had a pretty good middle, but he started a little bit slowly. 3 out of his last 4 have not been good, and, you know, he is so important. I mean, at what point do they think about readjusting the roles?
That's a good question. I guess the answer to that is who. The tricky part right now is who goes in the eighth in that case and who goes in the seventh. I mean, I don't know if there's a clear-cut solution. I don't know if they feel how close he is or not. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I just know that they need him. They need him to figure it out one way or another. I mean, I'm encouraged that it's not stuff, but he's got to figure out the command, obviously.
Yeah, no doubt. Of course, I mean, Nick Vincent, who was so good last year, a little bit off to a slow start. I mean, is he an option?
Oh, sure. Yeah, he was good last night, too. He got out of a couple of jams. He is certainly an option. I think the strongest role for him is kind of matching up in the sixth and seventh. I think that's the ideal scenario where you can really spot him in spots against righties in particular. But, yeah, I mean, he's a guy that they'll use late in ball games. They have in the past, and they certainly could moving forward as well.
Yeah, last night not good for the hitters. I mean, 1-for-10 in runners in scoring position. Just one of those games that kind of slipped away. But I thought Wade LeBlanc really pitched well.
He really did. And, you know, following up the no-hitter from James Paxton and another lefty on the hill does it completely differently. But, yeah, I thought he was outstanding. If you would have told me before the game that he'd go 5 and give up 1 run, I mean, I would take that every single time. And, frankly, you know, with this team, if a starter gives you 5 innings, just gives up a run, they're going to win the vast majority of those ball games. It didn't happen yesterday, but he's really solidified that fifth spot through a couple of turns in the rotation. But, yeah, you had to love everything that he did last night, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's one thing I'm kind of wondering about, because I know I've asked this. I think I've even asked this of you. I mean, now everybody has to come up with a new definition of starting pitching, because where it was for so many years, if you would go six innings, give up three runs, that's considered a quality start. Well, now pitchers aren't getting to the sixth. Or if they are, it's barely into the sixth. And so if they just give up three or four runs, now it's hard to get those earned run averages before 4.5. And so now it's almost like everybody's trying to figure out, is there a new definition of what you want from your starting pitching?
And I think part of that depends on the rest of your team. I mean, if your offense can score a ton of runs, if you have a tremendous bullpen as well, you don't have to ask as much of your starters. So I think the definition of that depends on team to team. If you're a team without much of a bullpen, if you're a team that doesn't score a lot of runs, you're going to have to ask more of your starters. So I guess the definition changes. For this team, I feel like with their offense, you're not asking for a ton. I think you're asking ideally for six innings every game, a couple of runs. But I think if you get that on a consistent basis through the course of the season, that they're going to win a lot of games and have really nice stretches. And we've seen that. They're on a nice stretch right now. And really, their rotation has solidified. And, of course, Paxton popped with the complete game a couple of days ago. But for the most part, the starters have been giving them consistently six. And it's so big because it sets up their bullpen. They're not gassed, which they haven't been, which is great. And it just sets the table for a nice long stretch of solid play.
Yeah, and that's the thing, I think, you know, and it's funny because I've been studying the earned run averages and all that. I mean, it's hard to pull the earned run averages down. Like, for example, I thought Felix has pitched really pretty consistently because he's been, you know, pretty much getting to six innings and giving up maybe three or sometimes four runs and seven or so. But again, he's been out there, but the earned run average seems so much bloated because even though he is pitching well.
You know, I think you make a great point. I think he's pitched better than his numbers have indicated. Part of that, a couple of times he's left the ball game and the runners he's left on have come in to score. But no, you're right. I mean, you pull down the ERA when you get into the, you know, seventh, eighth, and you're not giving up, you know, only giving up one or two runs. But you know, I think it's an interesting conversation to have about how we look at starters and ERA and expectations and what is a good year, what is a good game, what is a good season, all of that. I guess the definition is changing a little bit, except for the, you know, the top tier kind of guys. Those guys, you know, the expectations for them are a little different, that's for sure.
And of course, I mean, and the big dynamic, okay, is there enough for so many teams to be able to have eight quality relievers? That's what you wonder about.
That's the question. Although, I mean, even from, I don't know, 10 years ago, the guys coming out of the bullpens right now, I mean, consistently on every team, it seems like every team has a handful of guys throwing 95, 96, 97 out of the bullpen, which wasn't the case in years past. So the quality of arms, and you talk to former players, the quality of arms at the back end of bullpens are better than ever, at least especially velocity-wise, are better than ever. So I guess those arms are being cultivated in systems and being brought up and being utilized. And even a team like the Blue Jays, you know, you look at the names on their bullpen and they don't blow you away, but they have the best bullpen ERA in the American League. It's a lot of veterans. It's a lot of guys that's been around. But I mean, you still look at guys like Axford throwing 94. He's been around for a long time. So I guess the answer is yes. When you look at some of the bullpens that have been formed and just the pure stuff for most bullpens in the league right now.
No, it's really good. And, of course, tonight it's going to be a big game for Mike Leake, who's been struggling of late. I would imagine that he has to put things back together.
He's going to be key for this team. He really has. And what's interesting has been the walks. I mean, that's something that's been surprising so far this season. He's a guy that is certainly known for his command. You look at his season already, he's walked 15 guys in comparison. I mean, 2 years ago he walked 30 in a season. So that number is higher than I think you'd expect against a team like this, especially the Blue Jays. You don't want to give them any free guys aboard because one swing of the bat can change it. They've hit as many home runs, tied with the top in the big leagues in home runs. So, you know, we'd rather not put guys aboard for them to go long. But that's going to be the key. Stay away from the walks. But they need him to be consistent. They need him to give them innings, quality starts. And I think the big game for the Mariners tonight, too, a chance to take a series here on the road. They've been so good on the road overall. They haven't lost a road series yet this year. And I think they have a chance after the game tonight heading to Detroit to have a really good series there as well. And then the final weird game in Minnesota of this road trip. But they played really well on the road. Be nice to see them get a series tonight and then try and take one in Detroit as well to keep the good road play going.
Absolutely. And so we'll be listening in a broadcast tonight. Gary Hill, thanks for joining us in the Venue Kings Hotline.
Anytime, John. Thanks for having me.
All right. And, of course, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up, we will take out the grade book, taking a look at some of the wacky, smart, good things, bad things in sports. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for The Report Card with The Professor.
And, of course, The Report Card we do every day, and we just kind of grade the smart, the dumb, the silly, the crazy, the intelligent, what things are said, what things are done, and put an attach a grade to it just to try to talk through all the crazy stuff that goes on. Mara Dooley, what do we got?
Well, first up, this whole Terry Rozier, Eric Bledsoe beef that started at the beginning of the NBA playoffs when Terry Rozier accidentally called him Drew has turned into a budding friendship for Drew Bledsoe and Terry Rozier after Terry Rozier then wore a Drew Bledsoe jersey to the next game. And now Drew Bledsoe showed up to cheer him on last night and actually did a post-game press conference.
The scary Terry, the Terry Rose may be the thing. So, watch out. I'm going to have to talk to him. We'll bring him out to Washington. We're going to develop a profile, and we'll come up with a Terry Rose. It's going to have a great finish. How about that? There you go.
Thank you.
Of course, Drew Bledsoe has his double back winery out here, and Bledsoe Winery, so that's his new plan.
I think we have to give him an A-. I mean, he's able to, one, come out and get involved in the NBA. Two, he's able to start continuing to market his great wine because his wine is sensational, and I kind of like it, and I think it's kind of a good side story that's going on. So I kind of give this an A-minus grade, but, of course, I thought it was hysterical. Now, which commentator on TNT did not know who Drew Bledsoe was? Was it Charles Barkley?
Shaquille O'Neal was not impressed. Here he is.
Hey, who is that?
He was a quarterback for the New England Patriots.
You've never heard of Bledsoe? Eric Bledsoe all of a sudden?
No, I don't know who that is.
You don't know who Drew Bledsoe is?
No, never heard of him.
He was a great quarterback in the NFL.
Oh, he was? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
for the New England Patriots.
Hey, Ernie, I got to say something about
that. He started?
You got to be joking.
Yeah, he was
great.
Started? Oh,
yeah.
Great. I'm a Cowboys guy. I don't know them people.
Well, let's give Shaq an F on that one. I mean, it's not as bad as Ichiro not knowing who Tom Brady is. That was pretty bad. But this one, that's pretty bad. It's like you don't know who Drew Bledsoe is, and he hasn't been able to keep up on the story. I mean, hey, this has been out there for a little bit of time right now, and if he can't keep up on it, that's not good.
Yeah, it's funny though. Because he's a Cowboys fan, he doesn't know who other quarterbacks are. The funny thing is that Drew Bledsoe ended up with the Cowboys after the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a very good excuse.
No, not good at all. So that's a little crazy. But
He was with the Cowboys for a minute, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
So he should know who he is.
Yeah, if that's his reasoning. Next up, we have a pretty crazy story coming out. TMZ Sports is reporting. John McEnroe sat down with Graham Bensinger and told a story towards the beginning of Venus and Serena's careers about Donald Trump offering him $1 million to play one of them.
So he wrote me a letter, said, dear John, I want to offer you $1 million again to play either Serena or Venus. And so over the course of time, literally, my kids, my daughters have, Dad, I don't know if you can beat Serena. I'm like, God, I didn't even get my kids on my side.
Well, at least he's honest. And so honesty gets you a B grade because, you would think that he would take that strong male position. It's like, oh no, I can win this one, but at least he's honest. I think that's pretty good. And he's telling his daughters he's honest about it. So you have to give him a good grade for that. But what about the idea of McEnroe going against Serena? Who do you think is going to win?
I don't know. He said he has a lot of respect for what they do, but no one's going to tell them that he can't beat one of them.
Oh, yeah. Again, I mean, he was one of the most competitive guys you've ever seen on the court. I mean, he was great as far as that. But
at his age now, though,
yeah.
I think I'd take Serena.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But how about Trump trying to get involved with that? That's pretty interesting.
I know.
Pretty crazy.
Strange but true.
Oh, yeah.
Next up, we have an AHL game, the affiliate for the Flyers. The Lehigh Valley Phantoms had a record game last night. It went into five overtimes. Their goalie had 94 saves. He only allowed one goal. Here's a highlight from that game.
McDonald, bottom of the near circle in the Charlotte zone. Centered off Nedeljkovic. He stood up to make the save. Here's another chance. They score! The Phantoms have won the longest game in American Hockey League history.
So the game, that goal came 6 hours after the game started. And Alex Lyon was the goalie for the Phantoms, 94 out of 95 saves.
That is unbelievable. I mean, I guess you have to give them, I guess I'm grading so high today. I got A minus for being able to survive that long. I mean, a 6 hour game. I mean, don't you wonder about the fatigue factor? Were there stories out there about how people were wearing down and all that stuff? Because that's remarkable.
Yeah. And it's their playoffs. Game five is Saturday. So he doesn't have, I feel like he's going to need at least until then to recuperate from that.
I mean, man, that's just brutal. Crazy, but way to go. 6 hours. And of course, can you imagine how slow that game would go at like an hour number four and a half, an hour number five? That would be insane.
And the opposing team, Charlotte, they only had 53 shots. Their goalie stopped 51 of 53. So the Phantoms, I guess they just weren't that accurate because they had double that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The Phantoms were missing. I mean, they were phantoms on the ice because they couldn't do anything. Crazy. So I give that a good grade.
Okay, last up here, Professor, I have a cut from the Schooled podcast that we did with Joel Corey, salary cap expert for CBS Sports yesterday. I wanted to get your thoughts on what he said about the fact we've been worried about Aaron Rodgers' deal driving Wilson up, but he also mentioned that the Eagles could do something with Carson Wentz first as well.
I would have tried to make a preemptive strike and get Russell out of the way before free agency started, before the Cousins deal. Obviously, that can't happen. So I don't think they're really going to do anything until this time next year, after the 2018 season, going into his contract year. I think that's when there'll be negotiations in earnest. And there's another wild card you got to factor in the equation. Philadelphia, they do deals really early with Lane Johnson, their first-round pick a few years ago. They did that deal before they even had to exercise the option. It's after 3 years, first time you do a deal for a draft pick. If Carson Wentz comes back and is anything close to what he was before he tore up his knee, they're going to try to get that deal done really early. So you'll have that out there, and Russell Wilson will have enough ammunition to go, I should make more than Carson Wentz. I wouldn't be surprised if they made Carson Wentz the highest paid player in the league over Aaron Rodgers, and then you got another additional layer in the equation as well.
Very interesting. Joel Corey, of course, he joins us on Schooled with the Professor, thinking that actually, in the end, he thinks that Russell will end up getting more money than Aaron Rodgers just because of the dynamics that are there. So you got to listen to Schooled with the Professor on any way that you can pick up any podcast. But I still think in the end that somehow, some way, they'll be able to get it a little bit under Aaron Rodgers. But he's right about Philadelphia. Philadelphia is very aggressive with what they do, and they could take Carson Wentz and maybe try to get him done as early as possible. We're figuring he's one of the next great quarterbacks. Always follow the Eagles because, again, they are very good at figuring out those things. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take your text questions. Text us at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And, of course, it's time for your text questions. Lots going on. NBA now heading into the conference finals. Baseball season in full bloom right now. And weather's got too bad. And, of course, football is still on the horizon with a lot of things going on. Maura, what do we have at 710-710?
360 wants to know, will Mitch Haniger hit 30 home runs this year?
You know, I think he has a chance. I mean, the fact that he's been off to such a good start, I don't know, maybe in reality something will slow down. He'll end up with like 25 to 27. But, I mean, just to think that, you know, you knew that he could hit. You just didn't appreciate he was going to have that kind of power. But, I mean, he's been among the better hitters in baseball and among the league leaders as far as home runs.
253 says, I still think John Schneider plans on having compensatory picks. Maybe some of the guys we picked up won't make the 53-man roster, especially if they're not worth the fourth for giving them up. What do you think?
Yeah, scratch that idea. Now, again, you know, they lost, they signed eight and lost six, okay? So they would have to cut at least three. Now, if they cut two, they can maybe get an offset seventh-round pick as a compensatory. That is a possibility. But in the end, I think it's going to be very tough because, again, I think they're counting on these players to make the team. You know, maybe if there's an excess at wide receiver, which I don't think that's going to be the case, you know, you can cut Jaron Brown. But in the end, you know, they have to lose three. And the best they're going to get back is a fourth-round pick. Yeah, you can be judicious. I mean, you can go in with the idea. It's like, hey, if we do this, we can get one fourth-rounder back. But I think they need the players right now as much as they would want the draft choices in 2019.
253 wants to know if you'd rather go to a circus or a magic show.
I think maybe a circus, even though it's kind of old school. I mean, I love magic shows. In fact,
really?
I love magic shows. I mean, you know, I haven't been able to see too many live, but I know my wife and I often would, you know, watch some of the best acts that are on television and just see some of the things that they do because we'll watch that. But the great part about the circus, it kind of brings back youth. I mean, you think about all the crazy acts and all the crazy things that go on, and basically it's a circus. I mean, so, you know, you don't know what to expect. You don't know where it's going to be, but it's just kind of a fun environment. You know, sometimes as great as the magic can be, you know, it can be very intense, but it's all fun at the circus.
Yeah, I wouldn't go out of my way to go to either, I don't think, but I actually got free front row seats for David Copperfield in Colorado and went. That was a fun show.
Oh, yeah. Did you like it?
I did.
What did you like the best?
He made a whole like group of probably 25 people from the upper balcony of that theater disappear. Mm-hmm. That was pretty impressive.
And they probably needed to, too. You didn't want to see them around.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot. That's your magic trick, making Hattie disappear.
Absolutely.
The 425 says, if Paxton wasn't working the no-no, do you think Seager gets to the ball in the seventh?
Yeah, I think that I think he's really focused this year on his fielding. I think he saw a little bit of slippage over the last couple of years. But, you know, that extra adrenaline, and I know we were talking yesterday to Ryan Healy about that. You know, and when you have a pitcher that doesn't waste time on the mound and, you know, he's throwing strikes and he's doing the good things, you know, sometimes, I mean, having a ground ball pitcher makes the defense better because they're getting more opportunities and they stay alert. But now you're in that you're in the latter part of the game. You know it's so important, and that extra adrenaline's there. But no, I think that Seager has been fielding well, and I think in this case, I mean, it gave him that little extra juice, but I think he still would have done it if it wasn't a no-hitter.
253 says, good morning, John. Was wondering if you started crunching the projected numbers for next year's salary cap.
I have been working on it, believe it or
for
not.
For Seahawks, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, so, yeah, because, in fact, I know we're talking to Joel Corey. I'm schooled with a professor because, you know, we both go, and we both do this. I mean, you know, I try to figure it out from the revenue side. You know, like, for example, any little piece of information that's out there, you know, you kind of piece in there and all that stuff. But I'm still thinking that, you know, the cap rich now is 177.2. You know, I think it can still go up to about 189 next year because if it just goes up 6%, but if they actually get some more revenue, then, of course, it can go up even more. And that's where you need to figure these things out, because where you need to figure it out is, you know, particularly for a team like Seattle, a team like Atlanta, a team like Green Bay, you know, what's going to be the cap number of your quarterback? Because, you know, if it's going to be 189, you know, how does that work so you can keep it at 13 to 15%? Like this year, it's 13.2% for Russell Wilson, which is very manageable. When you start to get into the $30 million range, it becomes a lot tougher.
Yeah, I had someone message me when I posted a quote from Joel Corey from our podcast last night saying that they thought with all the movement this offseason, the Seahawks might have freed up about $10 million, and they thought that would help with Russell. But isn't Dwayne Brown going to be a pretty big cap hit as well when they redo his contract?
No, because when they redo him, his cap number will come down. Where the numbers have to be is, what are they going to do with Tyler Lockett and Frank Clark? That's where they're going to eat up some money. And are they going to do anything with Earl Thomas? That money's going to be accounted for. But still, remember, when you're looking at the cap, you've got to figure out $10 million, because what's kind of, it's not misleading, it's real. Okay, at the moment, you count only the top 51 cap numbers on your team, and there's 90 players on the Seahawks. Okay, once you get to the regular season, every dollar counts. And so what you have to do is leave about $10 million aside for injuries, the draft choices, all those different things. And, it goes pretty fast.
Yeah, and then they already have millions tied up in Cam Chancellor, who they're not positive is going to play.
$6.8 million, yeah, base salary.
Yeah. 253 says, if Cam comes back, has Seattle really lost that much talent? They lose Averill, Bennett, and Sherman. Their stats last year are not that hard to replace, couple kicks away from the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I mean, if they can get Cam back, and particularly playing at the level that he played, I mean, he was, 75 on the NFL list? He had as good of a numbers on safeties as you can have. If they get him back, I mean, that would be golden for them, and it does take away some of those losses. But still, I mean, you lose Averill, Bennett, and Sherman. Those are significant. I mean, again, you're not the same. They still can be good, and understand, they had the preview of coming attractions over the last 7 games when they didn't have Cam, and they didn't have Sherman, and they didn't have Averill, and they were respectable. That's why I think, people that haven't studied where this team is can realize this team may not be as dominant on defense, but it still can be respectable.
360 says, who do you think will be returning the majority of punts/kickoffs between Penny and Lockett?
Oh, it'll be Lockett. I mean, Penny, because Penny's, I don't think he's going to be returning punts. Sure, he did a little bit of that in college, but he'll be out there for most of the kickoff returns, because as Brian Snyder was saying earlier this week, they may have 3 returners out there just because of the way the new configurations will be if they vote for all this at the owners' meeting. So, I think in the end, you'll probably see, Penny on kickoff returns and Lockett doing the punt returns.
206 says, good morning, John. Could a drop kick be used on a kickoff in an effort to get more hang time and better placement?
Yeah, very possible. I mean, and, that may be something that could be scary, because, one of the things that I know that colleges experienced last year was the mortar kick. And the mortar kick is one to get one high in the air and get your guys down there, and that causes more collisions. And so, you can see that they now say you can take a fair catch and I'll make that a play, and you get it, at the 25-yard line or so. So, no, that can be one. And believe me, I mean, Maury, you were there Sunday. How many, you pretty much watched for about 45 minutes, a lot of drop kicks made by Michael Dixon.
Yeah, he's very fun to watch. It was more of a draw than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
509 says, Professor, would you rather take in a baseball game at the pool in the Diamondback Stadium or the hotel built in the Blue Jay Stadium?
The first one was, again, because I've never been to the Blue Jay Stadium, but the pool where?
Pool in the Diamondback Stadium.
Probably the pool in the Diamondback Stadium. The one thing is, I mean, as great as a view I'm sure it is from the Blue Jay Stadium, it's an old stadium. I mean, that place is getting a little bit older. At least, you got some newness there. And, of course, I mean, that it's going to be, a pretty good situation in Phoenix and all that stuff. So I think I'd rather be at the Diamondback game.
360 says, Parliament or Cool in the Gang?
Parliament. Makes my funks a P-funks, because I want to get funksed up.
360 says, JC, who you got in the NBA Finals? If LeBron makes it, do you think he has any chance versus Houston or Golden State?
He's got a chance because he's playing so well and some of the guys are picking it up. And you figure that they are taking on Boston down 2 players from the Celtics. So that puts them in. But I think that Golden State right now is still the best. I mean, Kevin Durant is just playing lights out. And Steph Curry, I remember they were still dominant and they didn't have Steph Curry. And Draymond Green has played such great defense. I just think there's a special element with Golden State, and I'm sticking with them. I stuck with them when they put everything together after the NBA Finals, and I'm sticking with them now.
425 says, John, who's the most overrated quarterback in the NFL?
Well, we'll see about Baker Mayfield, but of course, you can't say that he's quarterback in the NFL yet because he hasn't signed a contract and he hasn't really done anything yet in the league. I think one of the guys that now, because I've always had him as an elite quarterback, I think you can see that there's now a fading star on Joe Flacco in Baltimore.
Yeah.
They drafted Lamar
Jackson.
That would
be my pick.
And so I think Joe Flacco right now is probably considered the most overrated, although his ratings are coming down.
All right, last question. The 206 wants to know, with the Chargers defense and the work they did in the draft, do you consider them real contenders for the AFC title?
AFC title, no, but I think the playoffs. I mean, if you even look at some of the projections, I mean, most people have them at about 9 wins, and I think they are going to be a little bit better on defense, and I think that they have a chance to catch up. I mean, they finished so strong last year after getting that 0-4 start, and so I think they can be a factor, but again, Super Bowl, don't see it.
All right, that's it for Tex, Professor.
Okay, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we check in with Dave Crosby.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is Dave Crosby. And so, David, it's now official. It's complete. The NBA is set up with the conference finals. No surprises, I guess. Boston Celtics going against the Cleveland Cavaliers. They were able to take care of business. And, of course, Houston going against Golden State. I think we still differ on this because I'm still kind of leaning toward Golden State.
To win the whole thing?
Win the whole thing, yes.
No, we don't differ on that.
Oh, we're good on it? Okay. Everyone,
that's about as chalky as it gets, John.
Yeah.
Everyone's picking Golden State for good reason. But
they're good.
That's the best reason of all, is it not?
Well, I would think so.
I got to be honest, I'm looking forward to a Game 7 tonight, though, John. Nothing beats a Game 7 in sports. Now, your NFL didn't play Game 7s, but you could argue every playoff game is a Game 7.
Right.
It's win or go home, but you've got one tonight between the two best teams in the National Hockey League, John. It worked out weird this year because they only have four divisions in hockey with like 7 or 8 teams in them. But the two teams that scored the most points were Nashville and Winnipeg, two of your favorites. And they got a Game 7 tonight. So, I mean, to me, that's what makes this time of the year the best time of the year, when you pop a Game 7 and there is nothing like, especially for a city that's about to be an NHL city, there is nothing like the intensity of a Game 7 environment. And I want to throw in a plug for our friends up north at CBC. You know, as broadcasts have changed, you know, we don't tend to, on national broadcasts, you show some of the crowd. But, for example, on a Seahawks game on the network, they join the game when it's time for the kickoff. You know, the studio shows are the pregame shows, and then when it's time to go to the game, they go to the game, 30 seconds of talk back and forth, and they kick the ball off. CBC still does what they used to do in the old days, which is basically when they're gonna start singing the anthems, which they play both of always, and there'll be two of them in this game, they go to the crowd, and no talking, no chatter, no commentary, and they just give you the environment in the arena, which I think is overlooked these days as to how cool it is, how intense it is. And you know, it there's an argument that it doesn't translate particularly well, And I would dispute that argument if you watch CBC's coverage. So they do an amazing job of capturing the electricity in the air. And it's the same thing as at the start of a kickoff of a great football game, first pitch for a great baseball game, when the bell's about to ring to start a heavyweight or any kind of a championship fight. That moment of anticipation that it's about to begin is one of the more dramatic moments in all of sports, and they do such a great job of it. So. As much as you're right about the NBA Finals and being chalky and setting up exactly the way they should, I'm looking forward to the rarest. It's not the rarest thing, but there aren't a whole lot of them, to a Game 7 tonight in the playoffs.
And that's what's so advantageous of the future here in Seattle, because as good as it can be on television, and it can be good, it's still so much better when you're watching it live. It's so different. It's starkly different. I mean, just amazed how much better it can be. You know, they don't have, unfortunately, as many camera angles in the games as they have, say, in NFL games. And so what you really like is if you go to a game live, I mean, it is just sensational.
Great. Absolutely is, and they do an amazing job on CBC of giving you a sense of what those arenas feel like, and you're right, it doesn't translate, you know, in particular to what the game is like, but the crowd does. I mean, the game is in Nashville. Nashville was the points leader this year. They played in the Stanley Cup Finals last year. Everyone will wear the same color. There'll be, I'm going to guess, 50,000 people in the streets. Where that's become kind of the thing that just, you know, if you can't get in, to just be around. And they'll do a great job of capturing the intensity of that moment before that puck drops and you start a Game 7.
Now, that's going to be so great to see and so enjoyable. And, yeah, it is going to be kind of good to catch, too. So it's kind of a good time right now.
Oh, it's a great time. And then I would just contrast the NHL and the NBA, which is, you know, the NBA, like we talked about yesterday and the day before. even with the injuries to Gordon Hayward, and didn't know about that at the start of the year, but at the start of the year, if we had picked our Final Four, John, as casual NBA fans at this point, and I only watch the postseason, I don't even watch the regular season, I knew enough to say, well, it's going to be Houston and Golden State, and it's going to be Boston and Cleveland. And the league played out exactly the way you thought it would, and really with a tremendous lack of drama for the most part. Especially, you know, Cleveland got pushed by the Pacers in the first round. Congratulations to Nate McMillan and those guys, but that was it. The Warriors weren't pushed by anyone. Houston wasn't pushed by anyone. Cleveland coasted in the next round, of course, against Toronto. So you have not had the drama that you're having in the NHL, where you don't have teams tanking, number one, and you have teams coming out of the woodwork to an extent. I mean, Winnipeg is 750,000 people in northern Canada. You know where it is. And they came out of the blue this year to have a terrific record. So it's a lot more competitive, I think, in the NHL. And that's why I'm so excited when it arrives in town. And in particular, John, what's interesting about this is the winner of this series plays the expansion team.
Mm-hmm.
Las Vegas made it to the conference finals. So
how good do you think that matchup's going to be?
Terrific. I mean, Vegas is playing the best hockey of anyone in the postseason at this point. They're crushing people. San Jose is a veteran team that recently won a Stanley Cup and is a veteran playoff team, and they were completely outclassed by Vegas. So I think that it's, no matter who it is in that final, it's going to be a really good final. And it's just, again, the same rules as we sit here and talk today, John. The same rules are going to be in place for the Seattle NHL franchise when it drafts that were in place when Vegas drafted. I think there's been an epiphany, and I would say that this is probably true for every league right now. When you see expansion, which you eventually will in the NBA, you see expansion, which you eventually will in Major League Baseball or in the National Football League, which it'll eventually happen. We know that it will. I think that people are going to look at the NHL example and say, you know what? If you give these teams a chance to be competitive right out of the chute, it's better for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's better for the league. It supercharges a new fan base. And I think you're going to see that kind of change carry over because Seattle's going to have the same opportunity that Vegas has had to be an immediate contender as an expansion franchise. And where that was, I think, frowned on in the past, I think the Vegas example has shown everyone that's a good idea, not a bad idea.
Well, that's the thing that's so good about the NFL, even though still you have your elite teams. You know, they try to set it up so the worst teams have a chance, where in the NBA and in baseball, you don't have a chance. I mean, if you're down, you're going to be down for some time. And if you're going to be an expansion team, it's going to take forever to try to get the talent base to be able to compete.
Well, that's right. And certainly it's going to be easier in hockey because – you know, I mean, you don't have as many players out there. I mean, basketball is the contrast to it, and basketball is only five players at a time, but it's still tougher. In hockey, you've seen transformative figures come up and immediately turn franchises around, and I don't know that there's a more important team sports player than the goalie in the National Hockey League. I mean, you can get outshot 50-5, and if your goalie doesn't allow any shots, you can still win. You know, no matter how many shots that are on goal, so. You've got power vested in one guy in particular. That was a tremendous draft pick that Vegas took in a guy named Marc-Anthony Fleury, who is an elite NHL goaltender and has been elite all year. Right, with the Penguins for years. And the Penguins didn't make a bad choice, even though they got knocked out by the Capitals. You know, but they went with the younger goalie. And in Fleury, they got a veteran who is still at the top of his game and has propelled them into the Stanley Cup semifinals.
No, and that's going to be great to see. What about that hockey game last night? 6 hours?
Yeah, I saw that.
Six hours?
And did it end this morning? It ended like five overtimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if that becomes a trend, that's a bad thing, but I don't think that'll be a trend, John.
No, that was just what an incredible performance that had to be. But can you imagine the fatigue, even the fatigue of the announcers? My heavens, 6 hours on the air.
Everyone worn out.
Oh,
absolutely everyone.
Yeah, but at least it's a historic game, and whoever was attending that game, whoever was at that game, you know, that's got to be so memorable.
Except
for the players, they're still sleeping right now. They can't remember anything.
I would assume you're right about that.
So what's on Bob, Grouse, and Tom today?
Remember the Nigerian Nightmare?
Yeah.
He's on Bob, Grouse, and Tom today.
Christian Okoye
and Jerry DePoto as well are going to join us this afternoon, so we got a great show.
That'll be fantastic. What's Christian doing now?
We're going to find out at 1 o'clock.
Okay, well, that'll be good. That'll be Christian Okoye coming up at 1 o'clock. And, of course, Bob Graz and Tom from 12 until 3, Mariner Baseball after that. And, of course, I'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.